Hey everyone, it's Dan Bova here at Entrepreneur, and welcome to another episode of How Success Happens, the show where I talk to incredible people who do incredible things and find out how did you do that? Today's show should be very interesting in that there is a good chance our guest knows the answers to all the questions that I'm about to ask before I even ask them. John Edward is arguably the world's most famous psychic medium. You know what? In fact, scratch that word arguably. He is the world's most famous psychic medium. His show, Crossing Over with John Edward, was a groundbreaking series which introduced a lot of us to him and to this concept of having conversations with people who have passed. And he used the success of that show to build a psychic medium empire that now includes Evolve Plus TV, which is a platform devoted to mindfulness, astrology, dealing with grief. And he has a new book out called Chasing Evil, which tells the intense and true story of how he helped an FBI agent solve a serial killer cold case. I read an advanced copy of it, and it is wild. It is incredible. I should also mention that John, like me, is from Long Island. So beyond learning about his amazing abilities, you're all going to hear some tremendous accents over the next 20 minutes. Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me. What part of Long Island?
From Suffolk County, Farmingville.
Farmingville? I have a cousin that lives in Farmingville.
Really? Yep. Not Farmingdale, John.
Farmingville. Okay. I know the difference.
Of course. Oh, John, you should have known I was from that. No, I'm just kidding. So great to talk to you, man. Watching you on TV back in the day, and now, you're an impactful guy.
I appreciate you saying that. I love doing what I do. I've been doing it since way back in the 1900s. I started doing this in 1985, so it's been 40 years. It's my 40th year doing this. And to punctuate it with this book is an understatement.
Yeah. So before we get too much into the book, into the overall trajectory of what you've done, can you just define what a psychic medium is? Of course you can, but sure. Please, I should ask.
So for the folks that don't understand the term psychic or medium, a psychic is somebody who has the ability to connect with energy and talk about what's happening in your life now, what's coming up for you, maybe validating things of the past. And then the medium aspect is using the psychic ability to be able to connect with people who have crossed over, your loved ones and friends who are in the spirit world. And those two things go together for me. So not every psychic is a medium, but every medium is a psychic.
Okay, got it. I don't think I'm either of those things, but you might say differently. I think you say differently in this book, but we'll get to all that. I want to ask, I'm sure you've told us a million times, but for those who don't know, when did you realize you had these abilities?
So I've always had them, but I was told at the age of 15 by someone who was doing a reading at my grandmother's house. My mom's family used to have psychics come all the time and do readings a couple times a year, three or four times a year sometimes. And I went to debunk this woman to prove that she wasn't going to be able to read for me. And at the age of 15, you know, I was a little sarcastic and I was going to show my family, like, I'm not going to help her the way you guys helped her. And she blew my mind. She changed my life. She told me that I had this ability and she predicted all the things that I actually went on to do, things that at the age of 15 weren't even in my mind in any shape, way, or form. So that was my journey. I had a reading and kind of just was thrusted into this world of needing to understand energy. And I think my skeptical mindset meeting that made me a seeker and an explorer. And then I've just applied that kind of like overlay to everything I've done.
That's incredible. You know, I think a lot of people would probably, even after being told something like that, would just be like, you're nuts, and just leave it at that.
But I did think she was nuts. I'm not going to lie. I usually equate that first part of my journey with her, that she might as well have said that she parked her spaceship in my grandmother's backyard and she'd take me for a spin when we were done. I was like, okay. But then you know what? She produced that spaceship and like we did go for a spin in theory. So yeah. She was validated. She validated herself in a big way.
That's incredible. You know, this being Entrepreneur, I'm curious, when did you not only realize that this was something you had an ability to do, but something that you could make a living doing?
So that was the one thing, ironically, that I didn't want to do. I used to tell people that I'm a few I'm a few credits short of a master's degree in healthcare and public administration. And I was working in the healthcare system. I was in hospital administration. And that was going to be my trajectory. And readings were going to be what I did because it was my passion. It was what I was doing because I felt like I needed to. It was my way of utilizing a part of who I am. And I liked that if I didn't want to read, I didn't have to read. Like, I didn't have to do that to pay my mortgage. Mm. And then my worlds collided in a very big way. My hospital job and my psychic job legitimately collided, where a client that I had recently read for walked into the place that I was working and had that moment of, hey, and I had that moment of being like, no, like, this is no, these two worlds, this is not happening. No, this can't happen. But it started happening in a bigger way. Long story short, I was due for a pretty big raise and a bonus and a job title change. And my wife had said, can I just ask you a question? Like, why are you killing yourself at the hospital and killing yourself doing readings? Like, why don't you just do the psychic stuff? And I was like, no, like, that's not what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to have a real job with the 401k and the whole nine. And she was like, I just think you should do what your passion is. She was very supportive. Mm. And I didn't want to have that conversation or argument. And so I said, you know what? If I don't get the promised position and title and raise, I'll take that as a universal sign. So I was promised an 18% increase. And when my review came up, it was 2. And I was like, okay. Wow. All right. The universe is calling me out on my statement.
Yeah.
I gave 10 weeks notice. And I made Halloween my last official day. Because why not? I was like, yeah. I'm leaving like a credible position with a potential career. And the vice president of the hospital, the entire hospital, came to the department that I was in a little angry and said, I can't believe that you're leaving here to go read palms.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not leaving here to go read palms. I don't do palmistry. I'm leaving here to connect with people in spirit. Mm. And he basically said to me, he goes, listen, dude, he goes, once you walk out these doors, he goes, we will not welcome you back here. You are on the fast track. He goes, we're not going to welcome you back. And I said, okay, Sean, I get it. It's all good. I understand. And fast track, a couple years go by. That was in 1995. In 2000, Crossing Over debuted 5 years later. And in the second season of that show, that gentleman was front and center in the audience. And it was a very kind of whoa moment. Wow. I was like, okay. And he was there with an open heart and a happy smile and clapping away, very happy for my success.
Oh, that's cool. Were you, despite his happiness, were you just, F you, man?
No, I knew where he was coming from. I knew where he was coming from. And he saw him, he saw me and he saw himself. He saw I was like a 10-year younger version of who he was and wanted to shape my trajectory and have something to do with that. And that's how our past conversations, I started working in the laboratory. He started working in the laboratory and he was all the way up to be a VP in a hospital. And that's where he knew my degree was. And that was the trajectory I think I could have been fast-tracked on some level. And then here I am going, no, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you mean you're leaving? I'm like, no, I'm going to go now.
You know, when I talk to people who made similar kind of big decisions and bet on themselves, there's often a mild heart attack that comes with it, some self-doubt. You're in a unique position. Do you have self-doubt or were you feeling this energy like, no, this is absolutely the right thing to do?
Yeah, there was nothing psychic about that decision. It was more like I made a statement to the universe. And I was afraid that if I pulled that back in, everything was going to collapse around me.
Right.
So I felt like I knew now I was done there. I was done. And I knew I needed to allow myself to see through if I wanted to do the psychic work as my profession. And if I didn't, my wife had said, guess what? If you don't, then you can go back and work in the hospital again. And
of course,
I went,
yeah.
A different hospital, but yeah, I can go back. I can go back and work in healthcare. She said, then I think you need to bet on yourself and bet on what you do. And I say this openly, if there wasn't a Sandra, there would never have been a John Edward, because I wouldn't have been able to have the confidence to do that without the support from the person who, for all intents and purposes, she should have been like, are you crazy? You're leaving your job. What are you crazy?
Right.
But instead, she believed so strongly in what I was doing that she was like, you need to explore this. You need to go do this.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Dan, it felt like I was on a cliff And I was jumping off into the abyss, not knowing what was next. So that was a very big moment of, I'm either going to fall flat on my face right now,
yeah,
or I'm going to fly. And I was very happy to recognize that I was able to fly.
Yeah. Wow, that's incredible. Kids, do not try that. You can't fly. No, but that, metaphorically, what an incredible,
yeah,
incredible story. Let me tell people what the book is about. So Robert Hilland, a former FBI special agent who came to you for help with a case, and we could talk more specifics about that case, but he describes talking to you, and you're, no, I don't want to say in a trance, but you're communicating thoughts that are being sent to you, questions. Can you describe like what you're hearing and what you're seeing in those moments?
Sure. Whenever I'm doing a reading for anybody, I will equate it to like a daydream. If you've ever had a daydream, and I say, remember back in the days of school when you're staring out the window and you're supposed to be paying attention to the teacher and you have this whole other thing going on? That's what a reading feels like. It feels like you're caught up in a daydream, in this daydream. And whatever I'm seeing, feeling, hearing, thinking, I am now just going to convey to you, right? If I'm getting information, I'm going to tell you, if I see this, it means this. If I feel this, it's making me feel a certain way. Sometimes I'll get images out of a movie or a scene from my own life. And all of those things tell a story. So I just narrate what that seeing, hearing, and feeling moment is. It is not a conversation like you and I are having. It's more like energetic sign language, or for lack of a better way, a way of saying it, Pictionary or charades, trying to figure out what is it that I'm seeing and what does it mean. Sometimes things aren't as obvious as I would hope them to be. So through that seeing, hearing, and feeling, I convey information.
Is that frustrating when you want to just ask, what do you refer to the voices speaking to you? You have a name for them.
I call them your spirit team, your guides.
Yeah. Do you ever get frustrated with your spirit guides, wishing they would be a little bit more clear what they're trying to tell you?
No, I have a great reverence and a little touch of fear when it comes to... No, seriously, I really do. Yeah. I have such a respect and reverence for what's coming through that I always blame everything on human error. It's probably me. I'm probably missing this. Like, I'm probably messing this up. Part of my job at the hospital was, believe it or not, I acted like a medium there as well because I wound up working for the IT department. So I had to communicate the computer programming stuff and the user stuff to the nurses and doctors and people in the health, in the hospital. That wound up being my job, and having to explain the technological side to the user when the user really just wanted it to work. I don't care what's going on, just tell me what button to hit. I don't care. But a lot of the times when people would call me frustrated about what was happening, I would say, is it plugged in? And they would say, what? And I would be like, is the computer plugged in? And they'd be like, of course it's plugged in. It's okay. Is it on? And they'd be like, of course it's on. And I'd be like, all right, on the back of the computer, there's a zero and a one. Which position is it in? It's in the zero position. Great. Okay. Hit it to the one position. And they'd be like, okay. And then they put it to the one position. And they'd be like, okay, what did you do? How did you fix that?
Right.
I'd be like, it's just magic. Go about your day. It's all good. So to me, I'm the user. I'm the one who's not, am I on? Am I getting this right? I don't blame it on them.
Got it. So in the book, Special Agent Robert Hilland comes to you, and he describes that when he met you, you know, this is not something that you were very comfortable doing, and you said that you didn't, I think, want to do it at first, or didn't like working with law enforcement for different reasons. Can you explain a little bit about that first meeting and why this case was something that you felt compelled to help out with?
Sure. My dad was a New York City police officer and not a fan of the subject matter. And he basically said to me, I don't ever want to find out that you were working with the police. That was pretty much the gist of, you better have a respect for the uniform and don't embarrass yourself and don't embarrass me kind of vibe, which I really always adhere to. That was something that he and I were not very close, but have always been respectful of the uniform and still am. My assistant at the time basically was the one who got Bob in. And she had, at the time, made me, I thought that he had called a number of times. I only found out recently when we were doing this book. He was like, no, I only called you once. I was like, you only called me once? I go, she made it seem like you kept calling. And he was like, no, dude, I only called you once. So she was the one who actually kept coming to me and saying, hey, you know, this, we got to get this guy in. So I was like, fine. So we got that guy in. And when he came in, it was interesting because he's a pretty big guy. He's, I don't know, 6 foot something. Like, he towers over me. 6 foot eight or something, like some ridiculous height. Very imposing and not very giving in that moment. He was like walled off.
Right.
And what I later found out is that he was there to expose me as being a fraud. He didn't like hearing me on the radio. And he came under the guise of a very real case. And that sparked a connection, meaning the information that I gave him on the case and then the information I wound up giving him about himself. It brought instant validation to the subject matter. I think blew his mind a little bit about the possibilities. And then I think he saw me just as, you know, like right now people are discovering AI. He discovered JE. Right. He was like, what can I do with this? How can this help me? And it became an interesting juxtaposition because although I wasn't close to my dad and I really didn't need any type of validation from him, I'm going to say on a psychological level, maybe I did, because working with Bob was like working out some of my dad issues. And he's not that much older than me, or I'm not much older than him. We're around the same age. And it became this unique kind of vibe between the two of us. And then we had a lot in common. And then it became this cool use of my ability. So yeah. I say very openly, I didn't work for the FBI. I work for the BOB. I work for Bob. And he just happened to be an FBI agent. And we had success. I solved nothing and he solved his cases. We worked in tandem. So it was a great way of me stretching what I normally do, which is what I would encourage people to do in their fields. You may do X, Y, and Z every single day in your job, but maybe your skill set can be utilized differently in a different capacity, and one that you won't get paid for, and one that you won't get credit for, and one that is just good for you and fulfilling on some level. And that's what Bob represented for me.
I'll encourage people to pick up this book, anyone who's interested in this, because it's fascinating. It is a page turner. It's a thriller. It's incredible. I don't want to give away too much about it, but it's great. What you do is so different from the people that we usually talk to on the show. And I always start by asking someone, you know, how do you personally define success? So I'm really curious to hear what your version of that is with your business and also just sitting down with someone or, you know, your day-to-day operation. What feels like I'm doing the right thing here, I'm winning here?
I mean, for me, it's doing my job and being as accurate as I possibly can and never settling. Never settle. Like, I want to be better tomorrow than I am today. So for me, I'm constantly pushing myself. Recently, somebody said, would you like to see Crossing Over, the TV show, on again? And I went, new version or the old reruns? And they said, the old reruns. I went, absolutely not. And they said, oh, but it was such a successful show. And I said, it was a very successful show, but it's not a good representation for who I am today. It's a great representation of who I was in 2000, but I'm 25 years later. I am 25 years better at what I've done and more accurate because I've still been working at what I do. So I always want to be better. And I think that my goal is to leave people better than I find them. And where I'm at today and what I'm doing today, whether it be through evolveplustv.com or writing this book, Chasing Evil, or doing my next reading, I still want to be able to help raise awareness. I want to empower people. I want to educate them about energy. I want everybody watching this to know that nobody needs a reading. Like, nobody needs to come see me. I want to be able to teach them about the world of energy so that when they're making their own connections, and you probably are, you're not going to miss them. And I want to do it in a way that is grounded. And I want people to see it not as this esoteric out there thing, but vibration and energy and frequency. I'm a science guy. I went four separate times to do testing at the University of Arizona, three official that I could talk about. One was unofficial, but three official double-blind studies that are documented and written about in a book called The Afterlife Experiments by Dr. Gary Schwartz. So like, I'm into data. I'm into showing this as being credible. And that's the reason I think now for me, it was important when we discussed, Bob and I discussed talking about Chasing Evil and like, why now, why telling the story? It was to give credibility to both his world and mine simultaneously.
Yeah, it's amazing. And in the book, you say, you know, everyone has intuition, everyone. And especially at Entrepreneur, you know, we hear a lot about, I trusted my gut. What is our gut instinct? Like, how do you define that?
I think your gut instinct or your intuition is, it's that moment, that spark where you go, I know this. I don't know how I know this, but I know this. Mm. And I think most of all, and I'm going to show you in front of me at all times when I'm sitting at this desk and I'm actually doing my work, whether I'm doing an interview or I'm doing a reading, is this word, trust. Hmm. This is a very old rock. It's been sitting in front of me for a very, very long time. It is a reminder to trust myself, to trust my ability, to trust my process, because that's, I think, something that we can rely on. You can rely on yourself. You can rely on your process. You can rely on your knowledge. And I think being grounded and realistic, there are moments where I've done something and I'd be like, wow, this in theory is phenomenal. This in theory is great. This in reality is not working. Mm. And this is not something that, I'll say that before I got to evolveplustv.com being the success that it is, I had an epic failure, a huge epic failure, a gross epic failure, because I was too early in the marketplace with what I saw. Mm. I did a whole online subscription-based digital platform when there were none that existed yet.
Oh, wow.
Like where I hired the programmers to come up with the platform. And I was doing like this type of stuff back in 2009 and 2010. Okay. And people were like, no, you should be doing that for free and on YouTube. And I'd be like, no, YouTube was like new at the time. I was like, no, this is, I see it. Like I see it.
Yeah.
And I did see it. And I was accurate with what I saw. But my timing could not have been beyond off, right? So right. Yeah, was that successful in finance? Absolutely not. Epic failure.
Yeah.
Was it successful in a concept, in theory, and a proof of concept for me? 100%. So now I've just brought it back when it's the right time. So whether it be a screenwriter who wrote that amazing story and it's sitting in your drawer, or somebody who's got the schematics architecturally for something that they saw and they couldn't, it wasn't there yet because maybe the, I don't know, the materials weren't around yet for your idea. Go back and revisit and trust in your thoughts about who you are, but don't have blind trust and blind faith to the point that you're going to, you know, have that gambler's mentality and just put it all on red because it's going to be red. It's going to be red.
Yeah. That's incredible. That's such a great way to look at things. We always like have this feeling like, oh, I'm too late with this. But this concept of maybe we're just too early with it, is that's a new way to look at it. I love that.
Yeah, I said to a programmer maybe about 5 years ago, when things were already continuing to like evolve into this space, I said, yeah, I was a little bit too early. And he laughed and he goes, you're still too early. He was like, you're still too early. He goes, people still need to catch up. And you know what? I listened to that. And I just said, okay, here's the island of Evolve Plus. Here's the island. And when people want to land on it by boat or plane, awesome. This is what they're going to find on the island of Evolve Plus.
That's great. So when people come and sit with you, how do you approach giving them news that may, or messages that maybe aren't so favorable? Do you hold anything back? Do you set down ground rules before it? Or you just tell them what you're hearing?
So whatever I'm seeing, hearing, and feeling, I'm going to say. And I will often tell people that if there's something that's negative or difficult or an obstacle that's being shown or something that we would just deem as difficult, the reason why that I'm seeing it is so that we can either one, prevent it, or two, manage it, like having some type of preparation for it so that, okay, this is what's coming. Now, on the flip opposite side, there have been times where something really big winds up happening after the session in a negative way, and I didn't see anything about it. And in those moments, it's because I believe that the client's not supposed to have any prior knowledge, so that this way they are able to learn something from going through it without any type of anticipatory reaction.
So if you are feeling that I'm going to win Mega Million, I'm giving you the green light. You could just tell me.
I wish for you that you win Mega Millions.
Thank you. Thank you. That's my career plan. So now another big thing that comes up that we keep talking about is the unknown. I don't know what's going to happen with my business. I don't know if this idea is a good one. How do you advise people who maybe come to you with those kind of questions, how to approach it, the fear of the unknown?
So I'm going to tell you, the way that Evolve Plus came about was because of what I do in my own life, right? So if I have a thing that's coming up, meditation for me is important. Mindfulness is important. Timing is now important, right? Because I learned the epic failure of not having the right timing. So I'll look at numerology and astrology. So all of those things, I brought together onto Evolve Plus with people that do the work that I don't do. I don't do any of that. So I go to the astrologer. So I would say to a client, somebody who's in business, somebody who's got like choices, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to give you my insights. I'm going to give you what I'm feeling about it. I'm going to look at the basic numerology of where you're at timing-wise. If you're in a 9-year, maybe not a great time to launch something. If you're in a 5-year, I know how transformational it's going to be. If you're in a 1-year, I know it's about new beginnings and fresh starts. It's very entrepreneurial. Let's go, go, go. But now I'm going to say, okay, now I'm going to recommend you find an astrologer. And I'm going to recommend you look at your astrological chart specifically. And then look at the inception of your business. Look at the astrological chart of your business. And now ask that astrologer, when is the best time to launch that product? When is the worst time? When do you stay away from launching something? And not to like anchor the person in being paralyzed to, I can't, when... But windows, just like windows, right? Mm. Somebody's coming to me, they're going to go for surgery. I'll be like, okay, is it elective surgery or is it like you have no choice, you have to go right now? So if they have no choice, they have to go right now, that's a medical decision.
Yeah.
But if somebody's having elective surgery, let's find the right time. If somebody's going to be going for a cosmetic procedure, they're going to want to make sure Venus isn't retrograde. So that's the kind of insights that I'm going to say to someone within a session. Let's bring out all the tools. Okay, here's the astrologer I think you should go see. Here's the numerologist you should go look at. If someone's mired in grief, I've got two people that are like grief specialists that are on the platform. I'm gonna be like, you need to work with one of them. Go figure out which astrologer, go figure out which grief therapist you wanna go connect with. What are the tools that we could use to get rid of, what's the word? Obstacles and blockages. So fear becomes an obstacle and a blockage moving forward. And that's the one thing, even in the epic failure of my first iteration of the online platform, I never let it be an obstacle or a blockage that was so insurmountable that I stopped doing it. Because I believed and trusted enough in the concept and my process and what I saw that I just had to figure out how to get there.
Oh, that's great. We've got a reader question from Lisa L., who wants to know, if you worry that one day you might wake up and not have these connections anymore?
I don't. That's a great question. And I think the reason why I don't worry about that is because I have such a respect and reverence for the process. I would never think that they wouldn't be there for me. And if that was the case, I think I would probably wind up teaching about it mostly. If I couldn't do it, I would want to teach about it. Following like somebody who's a successful dancer. If somebody's a successful dancer and choreographer, if their body no longer allowed them to do what they love to do as a passion, they would then teach it to the people who could. I think I would err on that side.
Oh, that's great. I love that. You've spoken to so many people. Is there a common message that you hear a lot from people who have crossed over, whether it's about moving on or moving on from pain or from sadness?
It is to honor their feelings. People here get stuck because of grief and we get anchored into the loss, into that darkness. So when people are navigating grief, it's like a fog that rolls in. And when that fog rolls in, they won't be able to see the signs of even their loved ones communicating with them. So I think honoring what it is that they're feeling, F-E-E-L-I-N-G, not what they're fearing, F-E-A-R. And I think honoring the feeling gets us closer to the other side of grief, which is love. So I think we have to honor our process of navigating grief and maybe honoring what we're feeling and then communicating with the people that are in our lives today while they're here for the moment when we're not or they're not, which is pretty important. That's an overall arcing theme.
That's beautiful. Well, John, we've reached the speed round of our show.
Okay.
I don't know if you're ready for this.
I am. Chocolate's the answer always.
Yeah. Well, it might be right here. First question. What's a habit you are happy to have and one you wish you could ditch?
Ice cream. Definitely ice cream.
That's the ditch or the happy to have?
Both.
Okay.
Definitely. If there was a competition where it's like who can consume the most ice cream, I'm a contender.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe we could hook you and Joey Chestnut up. And
I think I could take him. I might be on ice cream, not hot dogs, but I could take him on. I might be able to handle him ice cream.
All right. Great. So what is your favorite way to turn off your brain?
My favorite way to turn off my brain is nature.
Mm.
Nature is my favorite way. My brain, which I nicknamed Brian, is something my Brian and I, we don't get along sometimes, especially at night when I'm trying to sleep. So nature to me occupies Brian as well. I love beautiful scenes. Mm. So anything that's nature, natural, whether it's the beach or the forest or anything that's just pretty skies, like I get caught up in that. And I love that. Like one time I was driving across country and I had 2 hours left and I had an event that I was getting to. And the way that the GPS was taking me was like off a main highway. And I wound up like crossing this one section that I just got out of the car. I just pulled over on the side of somebody's farm and just was standing there. And I just took it all in. Like that to me is a great kind of disconnect. And then if you take your shoes off and you put your feet in the ground, that's grounding. So yeah. I love that. I love to be grounded in nature.
That's fantastic. You mentioned this a little bit before, but dealing with the afterworld, the afterlife, sorry if I'm using weird terms, but does anything freak you out? Do you get scared?
I don't, actually. I don't get scared about connecting with spirit. I don't get concerned with that. I'm more freaked about like humans, like living people scare me more than... And okay. To be honest, that's people ask me, are you afraid of the evil? And I was like, in the world, yes.
Yeah. Got it. And then movies and TV shows, are spoilers an issue for you? Is the afterworld telling you what's going to happen in the last episode of Sex and the City?
So it's really funny you should use that as an example because I get a lot of information through TV and movies. And one of the things before I read for a client, I'll say, I want you to have a Lost experience today, not a Game of Thrones experience. And they're like, what does that mean? And I explained to them that when I watched the TV show Lost, which is one of my favorites, if not my favorite, when I would watch Lost, I never tried to figure out what was happening on the island. I never tried to figure out the mysteries. I just went on the journey and I just appreciated the show for where the writers were taking me. As opposed to Game of Thrones, where I had a very distinct opinion about what I wanted to happen.
Yeah.
And when it didn't happen, I was disappointed. So yeah. I always tell people I want them to have the Lost journey, not the one where they have an expectation that can't be met.
That's fantastic. I love it. Well, John, so fantastic talking to you. As we mentioned, Chasing Evil is a book. It's out September 2nd. And can you give everyone a quick word of how they can keep up with all the things you're doing? I know you're also hitting the road. You're going on tour.
I am. I've been on a 30-year tour. I feel like I'm going to be like Cher starting my first farewell tour soon. People can find me at johnedward.net. And if they're interested in learning more about the subject matter, they can go to evolveplustv.com. I'd love to have you come there and be a part of that. And then Chasing Evil is going to be available where all books are sold. And there are autographed copies, I believe, still available if they go to Talk Shop Live. Robert and I both signed some books there.
Fantastic. And does your association with Robert get you out of any speeding tickets?
It has not, unfortunately. It has not. But again, I wouldn't use that. It wouldn't be something that I would use. I'd be like, have you seen this book?
Yeah.
No? Okay. License and registration. Here you go.
Fantastic. All right, man.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So great talking to you. Hey, what's the biggest hurdle that you feel like is getting in the way of your success? Let me know at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com and I will ask our next guest.